Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome into the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Coming off a big win against Maryland. Slow start, Steve, but they got things going. And this is now a Penn State team going to the conference championship game. Can you believe it?
No, I can't, but I'm happy. Particularly as somebody who lives in Maryland and talks a lot of trash to the Terps around here. I was very nervous. I was about as bad of a start as I could think. But fortunately, Penn State dominated the next three quarters. And other than that one play on the defense, I thought the defense was outstanding.
Well, let's go all the way back to the beginning, Steve. Let's go to the start of the season. If you're the negative Nelly, okay? We all know that. We know that. Now, start of the season, if I offered you 11-1 and heading to the conference championship game, what would your reaction be?
What happened to Ohio State? that would honestly be my reaction. And I think I predicted Penn State would go 10-2 start of the season with loss to Ohio State, and I thought they would slip up somewhere else. To Franklin's credit, they didn't. And something did happen to Ohio State. I guess we'll probably find some time to talk about that. And they have everything left to play for. I mean, in terms of Big Ten championship and how that game plays out, it's really going to go a long way in terms of where they're seeding into the playoffs. And I think the seeding is going to be really important. We talk about a pathway to the national championship. And, you know, last year there was a lot of hype. The team didn't really meet it. This year, a little less hype, a little more hope. And at this point, you know, they overcome a lot. I think that's a mark of a good team. And they have everything left to play for, and they should be excited.
And going into Saturday, Michigan, Ohio State, and this was a point of discussion last week quite a bit. Gee, do we really want Michigan to beat Ohio State or not? The thinking being, if Ohio State wins, beats Michigan, they go to the conference championship game. Penn State finishes the season 11-1. It's a guaranteed home playoff game. So Saturday, you're at Chuck E. Cheese with your little guy, okay, during this, at least the start of Michigan-Ohio State. We all know what that kind of day is like. I'm sure it was nice, quiet, calm time. So, by the way, your little guy who had the Chuck E. Cheese date, how old is he?
He just turned 3 in August. He was, for one of his buddies, who turned 4 on Saturday. They're in the same class. It was his first birthday party for one of his peers. And he had such a good time that he did not want to leave. So prying him away from the ball machine towards the end was definitely an experience for my wife and I. But fortunately, he worked up such a fuss trying to resist leaving that he fell asleep on the way home, which is why I was able to watch most of the game. All's well that ends well.
So you're going to be a regular at Chuck E. Cheese going forward. So anyway, despite your Chuck E. Cheese obligation, you got back to watch at least the end of Michigan, Ohio State before Penn State. What are you thinking? Are you like, go Buckeyes, go Wolverines? Which way are you leaning watching the game?
I think it's been clear earlier, like, two teams I always root against are Notre Dame and usually whoever's playing Michigan. And I found myself very conflicted in both games. I don't usually root for USC. That felt a little uncomfortable later on. But in the Ohio State-Michigan game, it's sort of like, I don't know what to do. I really don't like either team. My only saving grace is somebody here is going to lose. But I had found myself rooting for Michigan just because, you know, the disarray for Ohio State. And I kept thinking, the way I was rationalizing this to myself is, there's a good chance that Penn State may potentially meet Ohio State in the playoffs. And if there's a lot of disarray here, should Ohio State lose with respect to Day and his future, that should benefit Penn State. So that's how I rationalize my decision to root for Michigan. Not something I'm proud of. You know, I have family that live in Ohio. Again, something that I'm not proud of. But that was sort of how I was watching this game. And you asked me what I'm thinking. I'm wondering what Ryan Day's thinking during the game. I mean, honestly, like, the idea that you are a team with sort of a beat up offensive line. You're trying to run into the strength of that defense right up the middle repeatedly for what? Because some people online called you soft. I mean, that seems stupid. Why you wouldn't throw to your receivers? I have no idea. I'm sure there are a lot of people in and around Columbus that probably share my opinion. And to lose four times in a row, I think it is now. I mean, you told me, I think last week, you know, I showed my age here. The coach I'm remembering now is John Cooper. And, you know, if you can't beat your rival there, you're not going to be there very long. So I think Ryan Day's in the point now where if they don't win the national championship, he's probably looking for another job next year. And then you wonder, will Ohio State go after their coach at Notre Dame? He's an Ohio State alum. I mean, you know, at this point, everything's on the table.
Well, it's interesting in talking about that game. I found myself also kind of adjusting. I've been the guy, and this is me being selfish, okay? I know that's a crazy concept, Jim being selfish, Jim thinking about Jim, but yeah, it occasionally happens. And I have been, ever since the announcement of the 12-team playoff, I've been gaga over a home playoff game. To me, that is like the ultimate. I want to see it. I want to know what it's going to feel like. I want to understand what a home playoff game at Beaver Stadium will look like. I couldn't wait for that. But as this game kept going, I started to find myself thinking, okay, Michigan, how about we do get a conference championship game? And I was so concerned that, okay, I'm going to change my allegiance as if it matters. It's going to have an effect on the game. Would I now jinx Michigan and they would ultimately lose the game? And as Michigan's driving late in the game, that quarterback throws an interception. I'm like, oh, my God, just awful quarterback play from Michigan. Not so great quarterback play from Ohio State either. But I started getting used to the idea of, hey, how about a conference championship game? And then when the game ends, you brought up Ryan Day and what he's thinking. I can't imagine what he's thinking right now. I can't imagine what he was thinking during the game, how conservative they got, like you were talking about, Steve.
I can't imagine what he was thinking after the game when you had that issue with Michigan trying to plant the flag at midfield. I mean, where is Ryan Day in that? That's up to the coach to sort of control that situation. That's not going to do anything to endear himself to the Buckeye faithful there, I would think. But I sort of digress. You know, honestly, I kept wondering too, going back to Will Howard and, you know, how he talked a lot of trash coming into the Penn State game about a Pennsylvania guy that wasn't recruited by Penn State. I mean, I think we sort of saw now why nobody big time really recruited him. I mean, that really came through in this game. And I kept going back to, you know, if I was critical of Sean Clifford, and I stand by a fair amount of that, but if Clifford were on that team with Ohio State and all that talent there, I think he would have done better than Will Howard. And I just wondered, for a team that supposedly cost $20 million to build this year, why they didn't get a better quarterback? I can't help but scratch my head at that.
Well, you have to look at availability. And what I actually wonder with that team is every year they bring in at least one and maybe two really highly regarded quarterbacks. Now, we're looking at, and I haven't watched a lot of Syracuse football, but I see some of the numbers that come out. Kyle McCord, who they essentially ran out of town after last year. You said about Sean Clifford. My question is, would Kyle McCord have been a better quarterback for this team this year?
It's tough to know. I mean, for whatever reason, that wasn't working for them. Going back to McCord's, you know, recruitment in high school, I mean, he played on the same team in high school as Marvin Harrison Jr. And, you know, that would make, I think, any quarterback in high school look pretty good. So I'm sure there's a lot of second guessing right now in Columbus, particularly amongst the donor class. But at the end of the day, a lot of other teams put up a lot more points than Ohio State against that Michigan defense. And Ohio State's playing at home. They're playing, you know, in the cold. You know, they're ranked number two, three touchdown favorites. Michigan's playing without their two best players. They were without their tight end and their best defensive back too. So I don't feel bad for the Buckeyes. But then I sort of think about, too, is what does it mean for Penn State? The opportunity now to match up against Oregon. I think they probably match up against them more favorably than Ohio State, to be honest. So there's some hope there. And then I sort of think about, you know, what does it mean for Penn State to play in this championship game? What's it going to mean for their seeding? You could still, if they win, I assume they might get the, they should have the top spot. But, you know, if they lose, I think it's really going to depend on how they lose, by how much. Because if it's competitive, you know, it's a big difference to be ranked 5 or 6 in this seeding as opposed to 7 or 8. Yeah, even if you're hosting a playoff game. So I think that's sort of, you know, going back to the beginning is what does this mean for Penn State and the playoff future? But, you know, that was all this was running through my head, you know, right before the Maryland-Penn State game. And I also kept wondering, too, you know, is this going to motivate Penn State more to come out knowing that they have this to play for? And needless to say, I was pretty unimpressed when they fumbled the first possession, gave up a touchdown on the first play to Maryland, and then went out 3 and out again on the offensively for the entire first quarter. So,
yeah, it was the slow start. And we'll get to that, and we'll also get to the Penn State-Oregon matchup. One last item that you had alluded to with this Ohio State Michigan game was that end of game brawl that happened. And it's starting with, and apparently a lot of this is going around now, planting your flag on the other team's logo, which I don't get why that's so important for the team doing it. I also don't get why the home team that just lost is all of a sudden has so much fight in them and they're so offended. Couldn't you put, you know, channel that anger during the 60 minutes of the game?
I'm with you in terms of the time to show your fight was on the field to prevent the loss. I will give Franklin credit. Earlier in the season, I forget whether it's USC game or one of the other ones where one of the Penn State players was sort of overly excited and tried to run out and plant the flag. And Franklin, to his credit, stopped him. Because I think at that point, thinking seasons ahead, there's really no good that can come of that. You know, there should still be an element of class with how you win. And that's something that I hope they see Penn State pursuing.
Yes, I was happy about that. Then we'll talk, though, about the end of game, that Penn State late touchdown. We'll talk about that also when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number 2. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. Penn State now is headed to the conference championship game against Oregon. That's next weekend in Indianapolis. Before we talk more about that, we're still going over Saturday's games. And we were starting with Michigan and Ohio State. And there was a brawl after that game. It was initiated when, I guess, Michigan players were looking to plant their flag on the Ohio State logo. And as much as, you know, this is between Michigan and Ohio State. So, candidly, Steve, my reaction to it was, oh, that's a shame, isn't it? Well, but it's still what bothers me is, why do they want to plant the flag? You won the game. Just get off the field or whatever. Don't instigate a problem. If you're Ohio State, you lost. You lost. Walk off the field. Don't start – you fighting with Michigan over the flag doesn't change one important fact. That important fact, Steve, is you lost as a 20-point favorite. You still lost. And then Ryan Day standing on the sideline, bewildered, doing nothing makes it even worse. And I'm really glad you brought up, because I had forgotten about James Franklin had stopped that kind of behavior by the Penn State players earlier in the year. And you know who else did the same thing? Steve Sarkisian for Texas. His players were doing the same thing, and he made a beeline to the middle of the field and stopped it. Credit to Sarkisian also, Steve.
Yeah, and no credit to Ryan Day. I mean, just to be absent in that position, that's what you're supposed to be there for. Again, that does not bode well for his future there.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, there's several, you know, pictures of him, video of him, where he just looks bewildered on the sideline. Which leads me, as we're talking sportsmanship, and I know what your thoughts are on Michigan, but let's talk about Penn State, end of game, last play of the game, James Franklin, as I'm chuckling, you can probably guess how I feel about it. He throws for a touchdown, and, well, let me just in general get your thoughts on it. First of all, did you have any problem with it?
None at all. Knowing the history there with the way Franklin was treated by Maryland. So I live here in Maryland. I probably know it as much, more familiar with it than most. He was a head coach in waiting, and they screwed him over. And I don't think he reacted any differently than I would or most people would when presented the opportunity. The other thing I'll add is he sort of made this point when he was asked about it in the post-game press conference, is those guys coming in there, the second and 13 that work real hard all year, I mean, they have a right to play too. You know, they're out there, they work hard, they don't want to just hand the ball off, and I appreciate that. And I thought he also made a good point pointing out that had Maryland put in their second and third stringers, then maybe he would have taken a different course of action. But Maryland at that point still left a lot of their starters in and were clearly trying to influence the game. Yeah, I get why Loxley's upset. But at the same time, I wouldn't draw attention to the last 4 seconds. He ought to worry more about 59 minutes and 56 seconds before, where they were just getting the crap kicked out of him by Penn State on both sides of the ball. I mean, to sit there and just whine about the last 4 seconds, I don't know that that's necessarily a good look for him. So, you know, in this particular case, I don't really have a problem with it.
I don't either with James Franklin. In fact, I kind of like the he has several reasons to not like Maryland, okay? As you pointed out, the way they treated him when he was the head coach in waiting down there. Remember, this is also the Maryland team who refused to shake hands prior to a game.
I was there. I was at that game. And Penn State lost that game. I still remember that. It still bothers me.
But with all of that, and I actually think, too, Loxley has not done a very good job. He had a quarterback to his brother, who I thought was always a threat and carried them, but he never really built a team around him for years. He's in a tremendous recruiting area. The DMV area is fantastic for recruiting, and Franklin just kicks his butt down there in recruiting. And yeah, if I'm Loxley, I think, you know what? This isn't a good look having my butt handed to me in this game. And then my post game is about complaining about the last touchdown as time was running out. Not a good look for him.
Well, no, I also just, there's some strategic element besides Franklin's just revenge factor, which again, I wouldn't overstate that. But Maryland, it is a fertile recruiting ground here in the DMV. And a lot of times Penn State's going up against Maryland. Sometimes Maryland outkicks their coverage for these recruits. So for Penn State and Franklin in particular to be able to say, hey, we beat these guys by how much? Why do you want to go over there? I think that's good for him from a strategic standpoint. And then too, Penn State barely beat Minnesota the week before. We're talking about that sort of not being that impressive of a win. I mean, we're in this position now. We're talking about seeding, and not everybody watches all the games. Let's just be honest here. And style points matter. And putting a beating on Maryland is something that people are looking at Penn State to do. And, you know, we being seeded 5-6 or 6-7, that in terms of your pathway to the playoffs here can be very influential. So, again, for all these reasons, I really don't have a problem with what Franklin did.
No, and I think if I'm wondering if there's also something underlying between Franklin and Loxley beyond, you know, Maryland, you know, that there's more going on there.
Well, I believe they were on the staff there at Maryland at the same time. So I don't know if you know, there's some underlying beef going back to that point, but that wouldn't surprise me either.
And it doesn't bother me if there is. So, you know, you go, James, okay? Take it to them. I don't think there are many Penn State fans who are sympathetic to Maryland and their cause. So let's talk about the game a little bit here, Steve. As you pointed out, slow start, it was really funny. After Michigan upsets Ohio State, I started getting all these text messages before the Penn State game. And it's like, hey, going to the conference championship game. And, of course, fumble Maryland to their credit. And I do give them credit. New quarterback in there, they were okay with that. They went over the top early to try to score quickly. And it worked. It was effective. And everybody quick, oh, my goodness, got to get past Maryland first. My take on it, even at that point, was, this is still Maryland, okay? It's still Maryland, and Penn State will be fine. What were your thoughts with the slow start? And as you pointed out, it wasn't just that touchdown. It was Penn State's offense then was three and out, three and out, three and out.
Yeah, the defense had one bad play. Other than that, I thought they played pretty well the whole game. It was the offense that really concerned me. Aside from just the fumble, it was how many three and outs? And not just three and out, the second possession, like losing yards, where Barker's kicking like a 50-yard field goal in those conditions. I mean, that's not an ideal way to start. I thought the running game looked poor, at least the first quarter and in the first half. That's concerning. I know Anthony Danko's out, Nolan Rucci. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. Probably doesn't help the situation. And I sort of think about moving forward, is that going to be a concern? You need to be able to run the ball. Again, I know the conditions weren't great. I don't believe Trey Wallace was playing, so I'm hoping that it's not something serious, that he'll be back this week with Oregon. But they just look very disjointed there in the first quarter, and you can't afford a start like that. So I'd like to see more consistency in the running game. I think Singleton looks better, even though the running game hasn't been as productive. I don't think Catron Allen's been particularly effective these last few games. So maybe there's some hope there where he finds his groove back. But that's my big fear. And you know, with Wallace out there, we knew that receiving court was already sort of thin to begin with. So with him not being there, you know, I thought more of it fell to Amari Evans, who made a couple of nice plays and stepped up, but I didn't really see anybody outside of him. Tyler Warren was Tyler Warren. It still irks me that he didn't get the last 5 yards or whatever he needed to set the record. Not sure who forgot to track that effectively. But that play where Aller just sort of flipped him the ball impromptu, I mean, that was that's a Heisman play. I mean, they should be showing that. I hope he gets invited to New York. I don't know that he's going to win. I'd like to see him. But if not, I'd like to see that play get some attention. And maybe with this Oregon game coming up, he'll get a little more airtime here, because this is, I think, the thick of the season when they're doing the voting. And, yeah, I guess that's sort of the thing. I thought Aller, you know, for the most part, played pretty well. One thing I did like, going back to we saw the Minnesota game, was this sneak play where you just have Aller under center and the two linemen behind him and just sort of, you know, impose their will there. That's very difficult to defend. But again, Maryland had a little more success, and I would like to have seen the defensive front there. And that just sort of concerns me, because you're going up against Oregon, that's just going to have a much better defense. And, you know, we talked before about how you're going to define a successful season. Penn State's, I guess, record and who they played, you know, sort of their opponents, they are what they are. But really, how are they going to match up against these playoff contenders? And, you know, we're still going to have to see, is this offense going to be effective against a pretty good defense? We'll find out more on this Saturday. And same thing with this defense. I thought the defense played lights out, but that wasn't exactly a terrific Maryland offense. They're going to have their hands full on Saturday with Oregon.
Well, I've been watching some of the replay, and there were a couple plays where the Maryland offensive line, their tackles, completely whiffed. They just whiffed on Penn State defensive ends.
Whiffed implies you made some effort to block them. I mean, there were times, for whatever reason, the Penn State, whether it was Deny Dennis Sutton or Abdul Carter coming around the end, they either just ran by the guy on the outside or just ran inexplicably across his face up the middle, which I don't get that. I don't know what's going on there at Maryland, but I mean, you would yell at little kids for playing offensive line like that.
Well, I'll tell you the other part. And this goes with the slow start and with the running game. I feel like early on in these games where P- Penn State is more trying to establish the run than they are trying to move the ball downfield. And it seems to fall into that run, run, pass, punt mode where it's predictable. They're going to run on first down, or when they do throw the ball, they're doing that little swing pass or something that in effect, it's almost like an extended handoff, and they're not allowing Aller to throw the ball down the field. And I don't mean it necessarily over the top, but how about, you know, 10, 15 yards down the field? That's all I'm looking for. And I think you've got a five-star quarterback here. Let him throw the ball. All right, I'll let you respond to that when we come back here, Steve. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to quarter three of our show. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about Penn State football. And Steve, when we were wrapping up the last segment, I was bringing up the fact I don't think they unleash Drew Aller as much as they should. And this has been an ongoing issue for me. I think whenever we see Penn State having these long drives, they think they want to establish the run. I get all that. I do. But you ever notice, like, they get the ball back with 2 minutes to go in the half and they have 75 yards to go? All of a sudden, it's boom, boom, boom. Drew Aller leads the team down the field. They're playing USC. They're down multiple touchdowns. Gee, we need to put it in Drew Aller's hands and let him go. Unleash them. What happens? Boom, boom, boom. Right down the field they march. My question is, why don't they do that more often? It's effective. You have, I know they don't have the greatest wide receivers, but in Tyler Warren, you have a guy who can get down the field. You have Amari Evans that over the top, he's a threat. I think Trey Wallace is a threat, 15, 20 yards down the field. And they don't let Drew Aller be Drew Aller. That's my issue.
I think it's a fair criticism. The only thing I would say to the Maryland game in particular was, one, you didn't have Wallace, you know, and so they're moving pieces around. So to not have that threat, we were already thin to begin with, may have played a factor. Two, you were at the game. I was at home with a nice warm fire with my family. But from what I heard, it looked like it was pretty cold and pretty windy. So I don't know if that played any factor, at least initially, with maybe trying to limit some of the deep throws. I know one time, I think Aller threw a deep ball. I think it was to Evans, who I believe made the catch, but it really hung up there for a while. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But I also, too, think there's something to be said where you sort of know as a coach how much risk reward you're doing some sort of analysis ahead of time. You should be able to beat a team like Maryland. So do you really want to run the risk of, you know, a couple inadvertent passes get deflected and suddenly you're down and you shouldn't be? I don't know. I'm just giving you maybe the other side for why maybe in this game in particular they were a little hesitant to start off airing the ball. But I would like to see them be more aggressive against Oregon. At this point, you're playing with house money. I mean, nobody – the spread, you tell me. My guess is it's between a field goal and a touchdown. But the narrative's not going to be that anybody's really picking Penn State to win. And if Penn State does lose, my guess is it can depend on how they lose and what that seating's going to be. But let it all hang out. Go out there and play to win and start throwing the ball. Be more aggressive because the weather's not going to be a factor in that dome. So that's something I would like to see this week that, you know, we haven't seen the past few weeks. But, you know, they were at Minnesota, I guess, the week before. It was also pretty cold there.
You know, Steve, first of all, I'm not sure if I'm offended or not when you started to talk about the spreads and you automatically assumed I would know.
I just know my audience.
I temper my being offended by the fact that I do know. So you were you were right. I do know. And it opened at 3.5 points. And it was interesting in the press box. And by the way, you mentioned, yes, I was at the game. And typically before the game, I'll hit, if I don't have my own tailgate, I'll hit other folks' tailgates. Well, I'm walking in and I'm like, no way in the world I'm staying outside. I'm going straight to the press box. I am not hanging around outside. And I'm blaming it on old age, Steve. When I was younger, I sat through all those games on the cold metal bleachers. And the old-time Penn State fans will know what I'm talking about when I say the Michigan snow game, the Notre Dame freezing rain game. Yes, I sat through all of that, and I stayed to the very end. Now, I was in the temperature-controlled press box, and even there, Steve, do you know, I was like, oh, you know, my toes are a little chilly here. So that is what I have become. I do get that in this kind of weather, and it's Maryland is the competition, you say, hey, you know what? Let's not risk putting the ball in the air. Let's not risk it. I get that. But this has been something that's been going on a good part of the season. And I think they've gotten away with it, you know, in games that they've been behind. But even in this game, it was frustrating when they were behind first 7-0, then 7-3, that they didn't open it up more. And I'll tell you, two other things where I think they've gotten a little predictable, and maybe they're setting up things for later, but when Tyler Warren comes in as the Wildcat quarterback, I'm assuming he's going to run the ball. And if you're the defense, that's a pretty smart bet. It took a few tries before I think it was like, they can't be just doing that again, running it up the middle. And he did throw the ball. And the other one is when they line up, and I believe they did it with Katron Allen, yes, where they both, he and Drew Allen are in the backfield, and they kind of shift so that Katron Allen gets the direct snap. The problem I have with that is if you're going to do that, how about just coming out already aligned that way where it's not obvious? Because when you get set and then both players shift, it's pretty obvious. Katron Allen's going to get the direct snap, and he's going to run the ball.
The only thing I'd say counter to that is the defense doesn't always shift. I remember being at State College 2017 when they did something similar when Barkley shifted, moved McSorley over, yeah, and took a direct snap, and the Michigan defense did not adjust, and he went 80 yards for a touchdown. It's a pretty cool play. Always remember that. But I bring that up is because if the defense isn't going to adjust, they may know that the ball is coming to him. Doesn't mean this front guy's always adjusting. There's a gap. So I guess I could see sort of a case to be made. But your point about predictability is there. I'd love to see Warren get one and just do sort of the old Tebow jump pass, sort of run a few steps forward and just jump in the air and dump it to probably some other tight end that's going to be streaking down the field wide open.
Well, I do know, well, the couple things. I think when they did it with Saquon Barkley, it was, I believe, the first time they did it that year. The defense is, wait a minute, what, you know, just probably confused. And here, though, they've done this enough times, and we as fans, you know, could see this happen. Oh, they're going to direct snap it to Katron Allen, and he's going to run the ball. Well, if anyone on Maryland's defense and coaching staff, and there's no guarantee this is the case, but if they've watched any film at all, I think they're aware of what's happening. And even if they're not shifting, they're thinking, if you're a linebacker, you're saying, I don't have to respect the pass. Katron Allen is not going to be throwing the ball. And the other part with Tyler Warren, when he's back there, is I think there have been times when he's had a pitch available to him, to the running back, or the little throw, or, you know, that where they could do something other than, hey, it's pretty obvious now he's running the ball up the middle.
Well, the other thing about when Allen's back there with Aller next to him, there's no threat of Allen handing the ball off to Aller. So if you were going to motion somebody, I'd rather see them do that either when Pabula or Warren are there. Or at least the defense has to respect, hey, this guy could hand it off to somebody else.
Well, and that's going back also to the Ohio State game when they're inside the five and Drew Aller has the option of handing it off or pulling it. You know what? They're daring Drew Aller to pull it and run because it's probably not going to happen. It probably should have, but you know, there's no need to respect it, or at least, you know, right off the bat. So, and just one last thought on the whole wildcat between, you know, Tyler Warren doing it and one of the running backs. I now find it really fascinating while at the game, when Tyler Warren lines up at wildcat, it's not like, it's not subtle anymore. Literally, Steve, the home crowd reacts to it. So if the defense isn't paying attention, the crowd is giving it away that it's happening because they are now reacting to it.
One thing I'd like to see Kotelnicki do, and maybe he's saving it perhaps for this weekend, or perhaps for the playoff, is with all the attention to Warren, you should be able to use some sort of decoy there. I mean, that should open up some other things. And again, maybe he has some tricks left in his bag. We're waiting to see that. I'm not sure, but I, something tells me that there's something there.
Well, we have seen the where he throws it back to Drew Aller, who then throws it back to Tyler Warren, and we've seen Khalil Dinkins wide open when that happens. So yeah, I'm sure there's more available. And you brought up the point, and we're going to talk more about this conference championship game in the fourth quarter. But you would think if there were ever a time to just go all out, hey, play to win. That's the expression I want to hear. I don't want them to be conservative. Let it all out. You're right. They're playing with house money at that point.
I agree. That's why I said it.
Yeah. Well, I'm now quoting you, Steve. I'm now quoting you. And it's interesting though. And the other thing I want to talk to you about as we keep going here into the fourth quarter is now I don't think we know yet. I don't think anyone knows yet what effect the conference championship games are going to have on the seeding. You know, how much do you punish a team for theoretically finishing second in your conference, but what happens if they lose the conference championship game?
I agree. We don't know. And it's also going to be something to watch when you look at the composition of the committee, ESPN. My views on their motivations are well known by this point. But our team can be punished evenly in terms of, you know, the second tier or the runner-up in these cases. I also think it's interesting, just big picture, you know, we've had this conference expansion that I think every conference championship has one of the participants is newly added a new addition to the conference this year. I mean, you have, what, Texas playing in the SEC, Oregon in the Big Ten, SMU in the ACC, Arizona State in the Big 12. You know, I was just curious to see, you know, when all this conference expansion was coming together, you know, did people sort of anticipate that you would have this outcome this early?
Well, you know, just looking at it, I think Texas and Oregon were not surprises to anybody. I think there were high expectations for both those teams. Interestingly enough, those teams like SMU and Arizona State, I think they were more of a surprise. We'll talk more about this, though, Steve, when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Steve, I'm Jim. And Steve, we got to the point where we're talking, you know, conference championship games, we're talking playoffs. This is great. And it's great that Penn State is part of this conversation. It's interesting to me, you know, I often talk about the national narrative. And for the longest time, the narrative was Penn State and Indiana don't deserve to be where they are. Indiana loses. See, I told you. And there's still a lot of folks, this narrative that Penn State does not belong where they are. Put them in the Southeast Conference. Oh, they'd lose four games, five games, that kind of thing. But it's going to be interesting how these teams are treated. There has to be someone who loses the conference championship game. So I think if you're Oregon, you have some margin to play with here as an undefeated team. If your only loss is in the conference championship game, I almost feel like Oregon is locked in to be the number one at-large team, which would mean seeded fifth. However, if Penn State loses to Oregon, that's when things start to get fascinating.
Well, I think it's how Penn State loses. You know, it's a close competitive game. I think that's going to go a long way to maybe moving them up in that seeding, in that 5 or 6 spot versus that 7th or 8 spot. I think who wins the SEC championship is probably going to be important. If Texas narrowly loses to Georgia, I just wonder, given the ESPN-heavy composition of this playoff committee, and they're obviously interested in the SEC, are they going to be tempted to put Texas ahead of Penn State if Penn State falls short against Oregon? It wouldn't surprise me if they do that. I've seen some prognosticators anticipating that maybe if Penn State doesn't perform well, if the game's sort of a blowout, that maybe Notre Dame could be ranked ahead of Penn State, which would really bother me because obviously my views on Notre Dame are well known. But I mean, at this point, Notre Dame doesn't have a win against a ranked opponent. A&M has fallen out now, and Penn State does. Illinois is still hanging around. So you can say what you want. I think the other thing that gets overlooked, you look at Penn State's schedule without maybe the marquee ranked wins, but most of the teams they played were pretty competitive. You look at the actual bowl eligible teams, I think that's why Penn State has a stronger schedule than teams like Notre Dame and others that may be up there, even some with a few more marquee wins, so to speak.
Well, they do. They've played a lot of solid teams, you know, Minnesota, Illinois, USC. Remember, USC has a win against LSU because it was so long ago that gets forgotten. Again, I'm not saying USC is a great team, but they're okay. And one of my arguments when I hear the SEC argument is, oh, so much tougher schedule. The problem, though, is those teams in the SEC who have lost to Arkansas, to Kentucky, to Vanderbilt. Now, the only team that I think has the argument is Georgia. Georgia has not lost a bad game. They've beaten really good teams, and they've lost to a couple really good teams. Now, you know, they almost lost again to Georgia Tech. They almost lost to Kentucky. You know, if almost counted, you know, Penn State had issues with Minnesota and USC also. So they found ways to win those games. So that's where I think the argument falls apart, is those SEC teams lost games that they had no right to lose.
I agree. I mean, Alabama in particular, to lose to Vanderbilt and to not just lose, but to get manhandled by Oklahoma. I mean, come on, 3 touchdowns. I don't know. There's going to be a push to see them get in there from the SEC powers that be, obviously. The only argument that somewhat resonates with me is, as a Penn State fan, I just look at it as, who would I really want to play up there? And do I want to play Alabama? Do I want to play Tennessee? I feel a little bit better about playing them in Beaver Stadium at the end of December. But if you're being honest, I'd rather have that pathway where I'm looking at playing either one of the Big 12 champions or somebody out of the ACC, candidly. I don't know if that's what, again, this SEC-laden committee is going to use to justify trying to populate more folks here from their conference to make more money. But that's something I could just sort of see resonating as a fan is, okay, who do I really want to see Penn State play? Who do I feel best they have the best chance at winning?
And, you know, that's a good point, Steve. And I look at it, too, that, you know, an Alabama or a Georgia seems to be the bigger threat. And an SEC person will say, that's why, you know, they should be ranked higher. But there also is the point where you have to deserve it and you have to earn it. So, you know, it's kind of like maybe we should take that loss to Vanderbilt away, because if Alabama were to play Vanderbilt again, Alabama would be favored. So I guess the actual playing of the game gets trivialized and doesn't matter anymore. You've got to count them. And I want to use that like as a segue, though, to these conference championship games, where I'm not sure I totally agree with Boyd, it shouldn't count at all if you lose. I think it should count, but I don't think it should count as much as a regular season loss. So my question is going to be, like, say Georgia loses to Texas. Now, again, you have to look at the full body of work, look at the games that they have won also. But I don't think that makes them like a full three-loss team. I would call it 2.5 losses, if that makes any sense.
It does. And remember, too, I just reiterate, I think it's how much you lose. You know, is it a competitive close game, a game that people might want to see again? I think that's going to factor into where the committee slots some of these people as well. But to your point, you know, I would agree. Like, if let's say Penn State does lose to Oregon, I don't think they should be ranked behind Ohio State. I think you should be rewarded for going to the conference championship. You shouldn't be punished if this, you know, for some reason you come up a little short. And again, I think that should be applied evenly throughout. You can't punish some teams for losing the conference game more than others. So I'm curious to see what the committee does, because this will be the first time they have to deal with it. And just moving forward, I just wonder, are these conference championships going to last? I mean, something that, you know, teams are going to, the conferences rather, are going to want to keep. And I think a lot of that is going to depend on how much the committee punishes the runners up here.
Well, the argument for them is the money. You know, they're money makers, and I get that. I understand it. But I also, yes, if someone's going to lose a playoff appearance because of a loss, now it's obvious, like in the ACC, probably the loser's not going to make it to the playoff. Like Clemson already has 3 losses. So, but what I mean is like a Penn State, Oregon, and the loser gets punished. Or if someone just says, hey, Georgia, that's 3 losses, you're out.
Yeah, I get that they're money makers. I'm just wondering, like, from the conference standpoint, if they're looking at is, hey, we would probably make more money if we had one extra team into this playoff field. And if somehow these conference championship games are costing us that, then they might look at it from your point, the money perspective, and determine, hey, we have more to lose it to gain here with these things. I don't know. It's just going to be interesting to see how this all comes together with the committee and the 12 team for the first time this year.
And part of this is, you know, which pot the money goes in. But if you just look at the overall, how much money is coming in, I think the more obvious answer would be, you know what, expand the playoff from 12 to 16 teams. You're essentially losing the revenue from 4 conference championship games. And it's 4 conference winners are playing in that those games. They then get a bye. How about just making them play in that first round, and you have that actual, you know, playoff game in place of, you know, a conference championship game? Doesn't that make more sense?
To me, it does, but we'll see how this, you know, plays out. And really, it's the Big Ten and the SEC. They're the two big drivers here, and if they determine that there's more potential money to be made there for them, then I think we know where this is headed.
Yeah, eventually it is money that rules everything, and you know we know that's going to be the case. And it's the Big Ten and Fox and the Southeast Conference and ESPN. They're the ones who rule this, you know, and make the call. And where do they make the most money? I personally think it's going to be, I would think another playoff game should have more value than a conference championship game, but I don't know the details of it. All right, real quick, Steve, let's take a look at this Penn State-Oregon game. I know it's early in the week. It's a ways off. We'll be talking about it all week, but as a Penn State fan, how do you feel about this game? How do you feel about Penn State's chances?
I think they have a better chance than they did against Ohio State. I mean, there's sort of been this monkey on Franklin's back recent years with Ohio State and Michigan. He's done fairly well against teams that aren't either of those two. I think they match up probably better against Oregon than Ohio State. So I'm more hopeful, which is something you don't hear from me very often. So just be honest about that. But like I said, it's house money. You know, I'm really curious because at this point, I'll just reiterate, because of the schedule, I'm not really sure what this team has. I'm still wondering how effective this offense is going to be against a playoff caliber defense. I think we're going to get a better chance to see that. We've only had one chance so far against the game against Ohio State, which left a lot to be desired, to be honest. And we'll see how this defense does against a quality offense opponent. Again, most of the teams that Penn State's played outside of Ohio State really haven't lived up to that billing. So I guess that's where I'm sort of excited to see, where does Penn State sort of fall into this other playoff caliber team. So is there a real chance to get excited about a run? And if Penn State doesn't look competitive, then I'm very discouraged heading into the playoffs, to be candid.
Well, I think it's almost like a coin toss, a flip of the coin with Oregon. I think Penn State has a good shot because I don't think there are any real super teams in college football this season. So I think any permutation of the top teams has a very good chance to be competitive. And I don't see any reason why Penn State can't be competitive. And I've been, you know, doing this up on my soapbox. Hey, open up the offense. Don't be afraid to chuck it down the field. I will remind everyone, last time Penn State was in the conference championship game, they chucked the ball all over the field. And they won that game, Steve. They won it. All right, that's good. I give myself the final word on this one, Steve. That's it for our show. Thank you all for joining us. Join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.